Thanks, John, and thanks to the organizers for inviting me. Today I'll be telling you about the dynamical response of many-body localized systems, and I'll mostly be talking about work done with my advisor, Shivaji Sondhi at Princeton, and with Rahul Nandkishore, who's now a professor at Boulder. So, you know, Igor talked about children at play yesterday, and this characterization isn't actually that inaccurate when describing physicists, because if you want to study a new system, we go in and we poke the system. I mean, you imagine you try to ask what happens, or you can kick the system, you can drive the system. We've heard some talks on quenches in many-body localized systems already. We're going to be hearing more. You know, we can talk about what happens if you drive the system by coupling it to an electric field and asking about the conductivity response. We'll hear some about this in the afternoon. What I'll be telling you about today is more in the spirit of a gentle poke, where you come in and you want to push at something locally in a many-body localized system. And, you know, we hope we don't get shocked, but we'll see what happens. So, to study the dynamical response, I want to talk about three variables. One is the amplitude of the drive. The second is the frequency, and the third is the time scale in which I'm observing things. Okay? I can consider different parameter regimes for these three parameters. One is the standard linear response regime, where you take the amplitude to be, you take the frequency to be fixed, and you imagine a very, very small amplitude drive. Okay? So if I couple the system to an electric field, you want to take the amplitude of the electric field to zero while keeping a fixed frequency and ask about how the system behaves linearly. Okay. Then I'll be discussing what I want to call the adiabatic or the nonlinear response regime. And this is easiest thought of as a fixed amplitude, but a very, very slow drive where the frequency is taken to zero. And finally, let's bring in the third variable, which is time. And let's talk about the Floquet regime, which is a fixed amplitude, a fixed frequency, but the time at which I'm probing the system is going off to infinity. Okay, now there's various times that we can discuss for these regimes as well, but I'm not going to go into that. Okay. So, in a clean system, 1 and 2, which is the linear response regime, and this, what I'm calling this adiabatic regime, actually don't look very different in practice. And 3 is almost always, okay, so we just heard talks from Anatoly last week, so I don't want to say it's always trivial, but it's almost always in an interacting clean system. Your system keeps absorbing energy from the drive, and at very, very late times, it just heats up to an infinite temperature unstructured phase. So if you look at it at extremely late times, you don't really have any notion of order or structure to talk about, okay? What I want to show you in this talk is that for localized systems, 1 and 2, which is the linear response behavior and the adiabatic behavior, can actually be very different. And 3 is non-trivial in the sense that there's been lots of work, mainly from the perimeter group and the Dresden group, showing that in a driven many-body localized system, even at very late times, you could get a localized phase. And I've done some work in showing how at late times, with disorder and interactions, you can get non-trivial phase structure as well. Okay. So in particular, in this talk, I'll study the response of localized systems to very slow, and the limit of infinitely slow is the adiabatic limit, local perturbations. And I want to focus on two questions. One is, how slow do I need to go to remain adiabatic? Okay, so there's a notion of a local spectral gap in localized systems that we heard a lot about yesterday. And here the idea is that states that lie within a localization volume actually are very far apart in energy. So there is a hope that you can go pretty fast compared to this local, or you can go slow compared to this order one local spectral gap, which is still pretty fast and still remain adiabatic. And I want to talk about whether this is true or not. And the reason this is an interesting question is that we heard yesterday that in many-body localized systems, memory of local initial conditions can persist for infinitely long, and you can have some notion of topological order or symmetry-protected order at finite energy densities. Now, this has led to many interesting proposals to use many-body localized systems as platforms for quantum memories or quantum devices. We heard a very nice concrete proposal in Normstock yesterday. But all these applications require you to have local control over quantum degrees of freedom. And a priori, this doesn't seem like it's very hard to do in a localized phase because everything is localized. You come in and you know, poke something locally or you drag something locally, and you should mess things up within some localization length, but nothing much should happen because it's an insulator. Things are localized. So you know, after studying the response to local perturbations, I want to discuss what this means for ramifications, or what this means for proposals to use MBL systems for quantum memories and quantum platforms. Okay, and all this work is described in this paper with Rahul and Shivaji. What I won't have time to talk about, but Sarang, I think, will in the afternoon, is the linear response of a localized system to a global drive. And this, he'll tell you how the Mott-Kubo formula, which is the famous sigma of omega goes to omega squared, gets modified in a many-body regime. So what I want to emphasize is that in localized systems, as a function of amplitude and frequency, there's actually a very interesting and complex phase diagram. You know, there's an extra axis time here, which I haven't even drawn. And the linear response answer, which is fixed frequency amplitude going to zero, or fixed amplitude frequency going to zero, which is this adiabatic response, they're just two limiting lines in this much more complex structure. And fleshing this out and understanding all the possible behaviors is work in progress as we speak. So, okay, so what's the particular protocol in discussing the adiabatic response? Let me start with non-interacting systems. It's easier to understand, and actually a lot of the results are already new and quite interesting. So the model I have in mind is free fermions in one dimension. You have some on-site, or you have some hopping, and you have an on-site potential. I'll consider different cases, but in the Anderson case, this on-site potential is drawn independently and randomly. And the protocol I have in mind is to take the potential on one single site, site zero in this case, and tune it over some time scale set by tau from some initial value to some final value. Okay. And as a result of this protocol, what I want to measure is the density response. I came in a localized system, I pushed the potential on a single site very slowly. How did the density of the system respond? I want to do this in two ways. One is, what's the linear response answer to this perturbation? And the second is, what's the adiabatic answer? And this is simply, what's the ground state in the presence of the potential at its final position, and the density in that ground state minus the density with the potential at its initial position, right? So this is if the system could have relaxed to the ground state with the potential in the new position. And I'll talk about timescales for doing this in a bit. And what we might expect, since we're working in an insulator, is that the response is local in the scale of the localization length. The charge moves away in this localization volume about the site where you were perturbing. And the rate for remaining adiabatic is governed by the local spectral gap. Okay, so let's start just with the linear response calculation for this problem. And in the Anderson insulator, this was actually worked out in a very detailed piece of work by Wolhard and Wolfle in 1980. What I'm showing you is a numerical disorder average simulation. And we find that as a result of this protocol where I pushed on this site here in the middle of the system, in the Anderson insulator, the linear response answer looks decaying on the scale of looks exponentially decaying, and you can check that the scale on which it decays is set by the localization length. On the other hand, in a metal, the envelope is polynomially decaying, and you see these very nice signatures of Friedel oscillations, as you might expect. Okay. Now let me ask about the adiabatic answer. In a metal, which, you know, in this non-interacting single particle case, is just the potential was constant everywhere. For the adiabatic answer, what I've done is I've taken the potential on site zero, and I've asked about the density response with the potential where it used to be right here and where it is now in the final position. Okay, and you see that the answer looks very much like the linear response answer that I just showed you. Charge is being expelled away from site zero, it decays with the polynomial envelope, and you see Friedel oscillations. So everything's great. Now let me do a conventional band insulator. Okay, so the potential varies from site to site, like so. And again, I'm asking about the adiabatic answer with the potential that started here and ended up there at the end of the protocol. And again, because this is an insulator, again, we see an exponentially decaying envelope, and the scale of this exponential decay is set by the band gap. Okay. Now let's look at an Anderson insulator, where I started with a random potential. I took the potential on this side and I pushed it up. And now the response is not local, as you might have expected. Instead, for a single disorder realization, it looks like I took charge from side zero and I pushed it halfway across the system. And this is an insulator, and all I did was push gently on one single site somewhere in the middle of the system, right? So to quantify this, you can calculate a disorder average zone of disturbance. And all this is doing is taking this density response, computing the spatial spread in the response, and disorder averaging it over many, many samples. And instead of scaling with the system size, we see that this disorder average zone of disturbance actually, instead of scaling with the localization length, it actually scales with the system size and shows no decay on the scale of a localization length. Okay. So how do we understand this? In the single particle picture, it's useful to think of the instantaneous single particle spectrum. Okay. So this is just a 10-site system. Okay. What these numbers mean is the localization. This is a localized system, so these are the localization centers of the different levels that I'm starting with. So this level happened to be localized on site 0, that is on site -3. And now I come in and I tune the potential on site 0 from the bottom of the bandwidth to the top. Okay. As I tune it, it comes into resonance with all these different sites. I open up some gaps. Okay. And at the beginning of my protocol, if I had these 5 sites occupied, at the end of the protocol, I now have these other 5 sites occupied, and essentially I've transferred charge from site 0 to the last unoccupied site at the Fermi level. Okay? And because the last unoccupied site at the Fermi level could have been with equal probability anywhere in the system, you don't see any decay with system size. It's a completely non-local response. Okay. So how do the gaps at these crossings scale, right? So there's two candidates for what sets the scale to remain adiabatic. The naive answer is, okay, here's a single particle spectrum. You have to go slower than the smallest gaps if you want to remain adiabatic. And the other candidate for localized systems is this local spectral gap. So let me start by just talking about the actual instantaneous gaps. Here's a single particle spectrum. At an avoided crossing like this, you have a state that was localized in site 0, which is this drawn by this red lump, basically. It's supposed to be at site 0. And you have another state localized r sites away, which is this green envelope. And at that avoided crossing, the two are coupled at rth order in perturbation theory. So let's think of the locator limit where the hopping is initially much, much smaller than the on-site disorder width, right? So because they're coupled at rth order in perturbation theory, the gap that opens between them is only is exponentially small in R, okay, even though this is just a single particle picture. So one answer is that, okay, if you want to transfer charge R sites away, you need to go exponentially slow in R. What's the other candidate? The other candidate is the local spectral gap, and we've heard about this a lot over the last 2 days. What this is just the typical energy spacing between states whose spatial separation does not exceed the localization length, okay? And this is given by the density of states and a localization volume. So why might we think this, why do we think this might work, right? The adiabatic criteria requires this parameter where M and N are just two levels, single particle levels, and as a function of time, it requires that the matrix element of the potential between the instantaneous eigenstates divided by the energy gap should be much, much less than 1. Okay? So the energy gap, as I just showed you, is exponentially small. But the matrix element, I'm perturbing with a local operator. These are localized states at M and N. So a matrix element of a local operator between two localized states far away could also be exponentially small. So the thinking was that maybe the two exponentials could compensate one another, and we could get away with the rate of change of the potential that was actually much faster. Okay. And it turns out that you actually cannot do this. And the reason is that exactly at the avoided crossing, where your gap is the smallest and you have the most chances of becoming diabatic, right, your instantaneous eigenstates actually look like even and odd superpositions. Which means that if I have a potential that's localized near site 0 and I evaluate the instantaneous matrix elements between these even odd pair states, then the matrix element is order 1 while the gap is exponentially small. So to remain adiabatic, I need to actually go exponentially slowly. So the local spectral gap cannot protect adiabatic manipulations in a localized system. Okay, you need to go slower than the slowest gap, which even in a single particle system scales exponentially slowly. Okay, so at this point, you might say, okay, your gap scales exponentially slowly. Who cares? I'm never going to go exponentially slow compared to the system size. Why should I worry about this? The reason is that no matter what rate you're going in, there's no separation of scales in this problem. Okay, you have gaps at every single, you make avoided crossings with levels all over the place, and you get avoided crossings at all length scales. And all these length scales transfer onto map to different time scales. Okay, so if I'm going at any finite rate tau, I'm going to resolve crossings that are less than tau, okay, which, because the crossings scale exponentially in distance, I'm going to transfer charge a distance that scales as log tau. Okay, there's no order one separation of scales set by the spectral gap. At any finite rate tau, I make a charge transfer on a scale log tau, and this is a highly non-local response in a localized system just by making a slow, gentle perturbation. So the natural consequence of this is, of course, that in this regime, linear response doesn't work, right? I had shown you the linear response results earlier. For a metal, if you look at the exact response and the linear response answer, they just lie on top of each other, okay? There's no difference. But in an Anderson insulator, the linear response answer shows this nice decay on the scale of a localization length, but the exact answer has no decay whatsoever. Okay, so linear response does not work in this regime. So what are the consequences? Well, there's two that I want to talk about briefly. One is for quantum control, and one is the statistical orthogonality catastrophe. So for quantum control, I just want to discuss this. There's many sophisticated platforms. I want to discuss one simple platform, which is to use quantum Hall a quantum Hall bar as a platform for topological quantum computation. And in this picture, we have some localized non-abelian anions in region 1 and region 2. And these are created by the experimenter. They're designed to be there, okay? And if this is all you had in your system, you would be good. The joint state of the quasiparticles in region 1 and region 2 define a qubit, okay? And you can measure the state of that qubit by doing some interferometry experiments. In these proposals, there's also a manipulation, like just like a constriction, that you can control. It's like a gate, okay? And when you're controlling this, you're usually doing it by changing some electrostatic potential between these gates. And you're going to think of the device in an adiabatic limit where this potential is changed very, very slowly. If you change it really fast, you're no longer in a topologically protected state, and then you've messed up the computation anyway. So if all there was in the system were the quasiparticles that I was interested in, you could do this, everything would be great. But in any realistic sample, there are always going to be unintended quasiparticles, like these red dots that I've drawn outside the two circles. And these can respond to the changing potential at this constriction and make long-distance rearrangements that are completely unintended. They'll cross your braiding path, and they mess up the computation that you started out to do. Okay? So again, I'm not saying that there aren't engineering solutions where you can go, you take a Goldilocks approach and go not too fast and not too slowly. But the theoretical limit in which we try to analyze these devices, which is a slow adiabatic limit, doesn't work. And there is no separation of scales. You can't count on an order one local spectral gap to protect your computation. Okay. And very briefly, I want to talk about what these results mean for the orthogonality catastrophe. In metals, the orthogonality catastrophe is a very, very well-known result. And Anderson had showed that the many-body ground states of a metallic fermionic system, in the presence of a very small but finite local potential, if you apply this local potential, the many-body states before and after applying the potential are orthogonal. Okay, and the way to understand it is, this is a metallic system. You have a many-body state, so you have thermodynamically many occupied single particle states. If you come in and change the potential on one side, all the single particle states feel the effect of that potential a little bit, and they rearrange in response to that potential, so that the overlap between the old and the new ground states actually goes to zero in the thermodynamic limit. What our results imply is that instead of an orthogonality catastrophe, we actually get a statistical orthogonality catastrophe. Now, it was long assumed that in a strongly disordered system, there was no orthogonality catastrophe. There were papers on this subject, and the reason was that, you're in an insulator, you change the potential a little bit, only states within some localization volume respond. And if no one else responds, then because you have very few states responding, your ground states before and after acting with the potential are not orthogonal. Instead, what we're saying is that in some fraction of the cases, when you make this long-distance charge transfer, your states are obviously orthogonal because you started out being here, you're ending up there. It doesn't happen in every case. It only happens when a previously occupied level crosses to a previously unoccupied level near the Fermi energy. But when it does, then you get an orthogonality catastrophe, and you get it with a probability that's controlled with the controlled by the parameters in your system. And that's why we call it statistical, because in many cases you don't get it, which is why if you just do a naive disorder average, you might just conclude that it's close to one and overlook this. But in many other cases, you do get it, and the probability with which you get it is well defined. Okay. We can generalize this to MBL. This was all for single particle. I won't go into the details, but you can use the L-bit Hamiltonian and ask what happens if you make a single field time dependent. The main message is that instead of getting single particle rearrangements, you can now get many body rearrangements, where your many body density is completely rearranged in some zone of total rearrangements. So now these are many particle rearrangements, and the time scale for that will generally be longer or even slower than the time scale for single particle rearrangements. Yeah. Okay. What I won't have time to tell you about today is the Floquet story, right? So Floquet is yet another dynamical regime where I can keep a fixed amplitude and frequency and ask about what happens at very late times. In localized systems, the system could remain Floquet localized, and what I can tell you about offline is how new quantum orders are possible that have no equilibrium analog, and it's a combination of driving and localization that allows you to have such an order. Okay. So to summarize, localized systems have a rich dynamical response as a function of frequency, amplitude, and time. And at low enough frequencies, the local perturbation gives you a highly non-local charge response, which cannot be captured by linear response.
Okay, thank you very much. So, questions?
Regarding the Floquet ordering, so I think what I understood from Dima's talk is that you can get no heating only if the frequency is sufficiently high.
Yes, that's right.
But when the frequency is sufficiently high, don't you get like an effective Hamiltonian description?
And exactly. Then,
so why would it be different order that you cannot get without driving? Wouldn't it just be like a renormalized?
Because this is true even in clean systems, but in clean systems you can have this only without interactions and without at zero temp, at whatever, at one quasi energy. The idea is that in a Floquet system your band wraps around, right? So because minus omega is identified with omega.
Okay.
So you can get, so I'll give you a simple example.
Okay. But you say it's only when you, anyways, this band if you drive very fast, then you have a very, very small filled band and
yes.
Then it wraps around. But it still gives you, if it's a topological state, basically, you can have a new topological state.
Yes.
Other than that, okay.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Well, can you summarize how will you probe the MBL thermalized phase transition with this method? And in particular, if the transition is not to a metal, but to a phase where is subdiffusion?
Okay, so I don't know exactly how to probe the transition, but one thing you could do is poke at the system and look at the response, and the response will look very different between a metal and an insulator. So you could study the response to see whether you're in one phase or another. But I don't think this is great for capturing properties at the transition. That's not.
Concerning this orthogonality catastrophe, when it goes to zero, how does it go to zero with system size? Is power law, and what is this power law or exponential?
No, it will go exponentially because you have a particle that was localized somewhere here, and now you've transferred it far away. So the tail of that particle from where it used to be is exponentially weak, and that's the overlap.
How are your results for the charge transfer are different from Mott formula for AC conductivity from 1967?
Because Mott is a linear response calculation. This is not linear response. Mott was coupled to a bath. This is without any bath. Mott had a frequency in it. If you take frequency to zero for Mott's variable range hopping, that response goes to zero. Ours is important exactly in the limit of low frequency. And that's just a linear response answer. Ours lies. Well, everything in MBL has to do with resonances, and our response has to do with resonances. So to the extent that, yeah, it's all a study of resonances, it's the same, but they're very, very different dynamical regimes. So there's no bath here. No, I don't need a bath. Mott needs a bath.
So can I just ask?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. There's other. So you drew this picture of whatever 10 levels, and the side mm-hmm. goes up, and you cross the level as it expands. So ordinarily, when I think of perturbations, I like periodic perturbations. So if I go, raise that side and go back down, will I come back to the initial state?
If you ruminate about it.
So you would.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would essentially absorb and emit.
If you stay adiabatic, then yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
So are there deviations from that, sort of, once you sort of away from that?
So the interesting thing in that protocol will come not if you're going infinitely slowly, but if you're going at some finite rate, then you get partially avoided crossings. Yes. There, with some probability, you make the crossing, and with some, you don't. And that's not, you don't reverse that when you come back.
And when you compare it to when your response, I would compare it. Full cycle, rather than saying, well, okay,
No, but you can ask about here's a fixed amplitude. You've changed it from this position to that position. Within linear response, what's the answer, right? You're not, so that's, okay.
So if I probe the orthogonality catastrophe, but at finite rate or at finite time,
right?
Is there like a significant difference to what happens in the localized phase compared to what happens in the metal?
Yeah, because even at a finite rate, you will make these long distance transfers. So in a metal, you go to zero as a power law in system size. Here, there will be an extra factor of time that will come in because you're going to make rearrangements on a time that's on a distance that's set by that time, and then the overlap is going to be exponentially small in the distance to which you transfer, right? So it's.
So it sounds like there should be a nice closed formula for this result.
Sure. So it's e to the minus. It's like your overlap will go as tau, basically. Yeah, will go to zero. Yeah.
Okay, right, I think we should move on there. So let's thank Vedika again.